The Baileys, the evening program. So as you may have guessed, there is an empty cushion here. For one of you. Oh! Okay, in a moment. As usual, the request is for a deep listening. And listening also to the thoughts, the judgments, the opinions, the views, the desires, the commentary that occurs. Sometimes this judgment lands outwardly, usually on the teachers, the front, or perhaps sometimes on the other person. Sometimes the judgment lands inwardly. Watch what's happening and see if there can be a receptivity, aliveness, connectedness in the way that you listen. Somebody once said, we can ask the inquiry question, a very famous inquiry question, who am I? Then we can spend the rest of our lives listening for the answer. So inquiry is a bit like that. It requires deep listening. And those of you who are listening are participating in the inquiry. And it's very important that your attention is respectful. I'd ask actually that unless you are ill or have a physical problem, that you actually sit up during the inquiry, because it just helps with the energy. At any time, of course, you may say thank you and leave. And for me, the same. I might say thank you and go to bed. No, really, I say thank you and you leave. So, in between inquiries, and I see there's some enthusiasm already, we'll have some quiet time, and then I'll ring the bell and ask for the next person. So just sitting quietly to begin with, please. I have to say, I've never had such a rush of enthusiasm for inquiry. There's very often a long silence, and then eventually someone steps through their fear and terror and comes up the front. I was told that I wouldn't have any problem getting participants here. It's true. Okay. Yes, anybody? This is already on, but you'll have to hold it quite close.
Okay. My name is Dani. I had a dream last night.
Oh, I love a dream.
That ended with a Buddhist question.
Oh, do tell.
In the dream, I'm going in a street in Jerusalem. It's dark at night. And I carry a bag, a beautiful one, nothing that I really have. And inside it, there are documents, very important documents in my life. When I arrive near the sidewalk and I put the bag on the street, in order to go and take something like dog food or something they offer there, I'm not sure it is something that is offered or is something that I want to take. It's I don't know. But I leave the bag there. And I get to the dog food, and somehow I don't know what it is. And then I realized that I put the bag on the sidewalk, and I said, wow, this is Jerusalem, it's not a retreat. Someone might take it. So I rush back, and of course there is a thief who takes the bag and runs away, and I want to run after him. But then he turns back and wants to give me back the documents. But it's a generous one, and this thief. But he wants to keep the bag, and I want the bag back too. So I run after him. There's a lot of clinging there. And but there are three people who grab the thief, and we catch him. And I'm very angry at him for stealing. And there is a policeman or policewoman there, but I want to tell her to take the thief, but she's doesn't notice or doesn't care. And also the people around the thief just leave him, and I stay alone with the thief, who is stronger than me. I say, well, I am the one who have to take care of him. So I decide that I'll punch him in the nose or something. But somehow I can't do it. I just want to do it, and I can. And when he realizes this, he smiles. But he smiles in a, like, well, something as if he's telling me, well, you're impotent or something like that. And when he looks at me, he has on his glasses, and he has a black filter on his glasses, looking at me, smiling, and I know there that he's not going to learn any lesson from this. He's going to repeat it, because I didn't teach him anything in this event. And then I don't know if I wake up in the dream or after the dream. I wake up in the dream and saying to you or the teachers or the Buddha himself, I don't know, to the sky, you see, there are times where non-violence is suffering.
Okay.
That's how the dream ended. So it kept me busy all day, this dream. It took me to very interesting places.
So tell me what you understand by the dream.
Okay. First, I noticed that there is a lot of clinging there. My clinging and the thief's clinging. And when I realized that when the thief was stealing my bag, I was also maybe stealing something else, I thought to myself, well, the thief is... I'm also the thief.
Mm.
And what am I trying to steal?
Yes.
And I had many thoughts about this. One of them was that I'm stealing the... maybe in the bag, I thought the term you used a lot, dropping the self.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me... Usually when I hear it, I feel judgmental toward this. Well, what does she mean by that? Or... it's as if you're going to a doctor and he said, first be healthy, drop the cell. Then, after 30 years, I'll drop the cell. But you want me to begin with dropping the cell, it makes me furious.
But you did. You put down the documents of your life.
Okay. Then I thought maybe the thief is trying to do me a favor by taking those documents from me. Then I thought maybe the documents and the bag is the Dharma, and somehow I want to take the bag, but then I realize it's hard work, the documents. So I give back the documents, and maybe I just want to stay with the envelope, the outside, and I don't really want to do the hard work of the Dharma that is in the documents. And I also thought that if I am the thief. The thief at last has these filters. So I had an association of Jonathan's Dharma talk about the filters you still have. And I thought maybe it's... And then I became sad, because I felt that the thief does not learn from his experience in the dream. So I thought maybe I'm doing a lot of things. I mean, I'm not sure of learning. I'm learning from my experience. I mean, it's just doing things again and again.
Wow.
And then I also thought about the documents, that there are documents that I don't want to give up, and I think I shouldn't give up. And that, well, I don't know if I didn't decide if I want, how personal I want to be, because it also had the question of aggression, that inside the whether I want to share it or not, I think I will.
Okay, you're off here now.
If it's okay, I warn you, I might cry. But
please.
Okay. I'll choose one memory, the most difficult, because it takes me back 38 years back. I was 19 years old. I was a soldier. It was the Yom Kippur War. It was 2 or 3 days before the end of the war. I was in the Egyptian front. We were after the Suez Canal, inside Egypt, inside Africa, we called it. We were in one point, and the, I don't know, the Egyptian army was far away. I was just a soldier, didn't have the picture. And then I was with an armored vehicle, Magmash. It's not a tank, it's a... And I was the guard. And I watched and I saw about 300 or 400 meters ahead someone driving, not driving, on a camel, riding very very fast. So I told my commander that what I see, and now everyone was waking, and they asked the chief commander what to do. And I remember he's asking, is he old or young? And we couldn't see. So the commander said, shoot him. Now, I was the one on the machine gun.
Take your time.
Oh, it's okay. So the old vehicle was it was like a man hunting. There's no other way to say what it was, with a lot of enthusiasm. And you know, you have a license to kill. So we approached him. I mean, our vehicle was faster than the camel. And we were shooting. Everyone was shooting. But something like 50 meters before we actually saw him, as a human being, I just couldn't shoot. It was not a decision, it was not a rational decision or a moral decision, it was a, you can call it an instinct or an anti-instinct.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't shoot. And the commander was shouting, fire, fire, and I just can't do it.
You said, I can't do it?
Yeah, I said, I can't do it. So he pushed me away, and okay, we drove towards him, mission was completed, the Israeli army had won this battle, and I remember this commander looking at me with some kind of contempt. I remember myself looking at him with maybe the same or even more contempt.
Mm-hmm. And the person who was killed?
Well, what about him? I don't know what about him.
Okay. Young, old?
I don't know.
You didn't see?
No, I didn't see.
Okay.
The mission was completed, but we came back.
Mm-hmm.
The war was not over
of
yet.
Of course.
I remember the face of the commander who looked satisfied. I mean, satisfied because, well, you know, we did it.
Mm-hmm. And your grief now about this situation?
Well, it's a process. I mean, first I thanked God. I thanked God for. I can't say it saved me from it because I shot it before.
Mm.
Who knows who killed this person? I don't know. But I think that in this point that I stopped shooting,
yes,
it's like I don't know. I can say I was born as a human being or
yes,
something like that.
So you touched your humanity in that moment when you saw the person.
I think years later, when
yes,
I was in therapy,
yes,
and I talked about this scene,
yes,
and you see,
mm,
it's not over yet. I don't know if it will ever be.
These things
then
leave powerful residues.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then I remember. Then I became a father myself,
mm-hmm,
and I remember that the first time I talked about this scene, I told it, and I could analyze it,
yes,
very nicely,
yes,
no problem. But then I thought about this man that he's someone's father.
Mm. Of course. Someone's father or someone's son?
Was really, I think I have a process of humanizing him.
Yes.
But I think that in this this day that I'm really meditating on this dream, well, I don't think it's a papancha. I think it's,
mm-hmm,
meditating on
it's
dream.
A reflection. Yes.
Yeah. I also. I don't know if it's the first time, but it really, I felt really sorry for myself.
Ah. Okay, please say more.
Well, I think of this 19-year-old.
Mm.
You know, my commander was a 20 years old kid.
Oh. Yes.
Half hero, half coward,
mm,
half victim, half aggressor, half everything. All those labels really doesn't really mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel sorry for me, for him, for being
yes
there.
So you can bring the same humanity to the 19-year-old boy who in that moment decided not to shoot?
This is easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's more difficult to be compassionate to the soldier who did shoot.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
The moment I didn't is, I don't know. Thanks God, I don't know who to thank exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very significant moment.
And that also brings me to the dream.
Yes.
I think this scene is one of my documents.
Ah.
I don't want to forget it.
Yes.
Although it is painful.
Yes.
It's a very important reminder for me, for both being able to be to kill somebody,
yes,
and not to kill somebody. I have the potential for both.
Sometimes, if I might just say something now, sometimes in the spiritual world there's a lot of talk about letting go of our story, letting go of the past, and so on. In Aboriginal culture in Australia, and people are incredibly spiritual, incredibly kind of connected to the land, don't see themselves as being separate from it. There's a wonderful saying, and it is, if you don't have story, you don't have heart. So these stories, this painful yet also beautiful story you've told, is the story of your heart.
Yeah, it is.
And while we want to leave the suffering behind, the agony of it behind, we want to keep the wisdom and keep the insight and keep the understanding of what it is to be a human being.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about not self and seeing things as not self, we're not talking about throwing away those exquisite, precious turning points in this life. Those moments where we've had a breakthrough to another way of living, another way of seeing. So how do you see what you've told me and the dream together?
Well, I think it's what you've just said. I mean, I have to I think differentiate between clinging to something and remembering or and learning from something. It's not the same. It can be. It's tricky.
Yes, of course. Reflecting on something is quite different from thinking about something in the way that I was discussing this afternoon.
Yeah. It's enough. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you very much for a wonderful Dharma teaching. Hello.
My name is Shiri.
Mm-hmm.
It is frightening going on this stage. Okay, I have a question. Maybe it can seem intellectual, but it's really something that interests me. I wanted to know about the connection between meditation, dharma, and physical health.
Oh. Did you all hear? The connection between meditation and dharma and physical health. What have you heard about it so far? What interested you in this?
In the first time I was meditating, actually no one explained me about it. It just was obvious to me that if we're like searching the body or cleaning the body, so it has something to do with our health. But I never heard about someone told that he was cured by meditation or something like that. I guess there are people that interest me.
There are, and there have been quite a number of studies done. You can research on the internet if you want.
Mm-hmm.
John Kabat-Zinn in America, who teaches the mindfulness-based stress reduction, began his work by working with mindfulness with people who were ill and for whom the usual kind of allopathic medical profession could no longer help. So attached to a hospital, he and some other psychologists worked with mindfulness with people who were suffering from terminal illnesses. And there's been many studies also by other people in this area where it's been shown that the meditation has a healing effect. It's not as simple as meditate and all of your illnesses will be cured.
So how it goes? Like, how you do get healed from meditating or...
How it works?
Yeah.
There's lots of studies in neuroscience now which are endeavoring to address and discover these things. At this point, we'd have to say we really don't know yet. So these are things that you can research and Google and look up and discover and read about. And there's maybe even some courses at university that you can have a look at if you're interested in.
Okay.
So, what's your own experience? You're not getting away so far. Not running off the stage yet. What's your own experience of meditation?
This time, when I got here, so I had breathing problems. I have asthma from my childhood, and there are seasons when I feel it more and seasons when I don't. And I got here and I felt really like I'm choking, like the air cannot go in or out.
Yes.
And in some point I have decided to check it. I have talked with Jonathan also about it. He told me just to search for myself and see, and that's what I did. Actually, I don't know for certain, but I feel much better.
Great.
I felt like I have a kind of plunkers in my lungs. And
sorry, you felt like you had.
I have an implant.
Ah, thank you. Thank you.
I thought it was an English one.
German. Oh, I'm glad I asked. Okay. <laughs>
So by looking at them, I felt like they dissolve.
Yes.
And I like sometimes I just felt it physically, and sometimes it had a story behind it, or like a mental thought or something. And today I can say I feel better. I don't know what will happen tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. Well done.
Okay.
So when we take our attention to the internal world and either sweep through the entire body or stay with an area of tension and pain, the mind does have the capacity to bring extraordinary restoring and healing energy to the whole body, from body and mind. And this we discover for ourselves, just as you have.
I have a little more question about something like that. Why it is important to, if I feel pain in my knee, for example, during meditation, why, what's the importance of not moving directly?
Okay. When you sit still and you have a pain in your knee, it's an opportunity to explore your relationship to the pain. So, what's your relationship to pain in the knee?
Sometimes I can feel the knee pain, but it's not something that I suffer a lot. But if it happens, I'm very anxious about it. Like, I'm very afraid of it.
Okay.
Like, oh no, something can happen to my knee. I won't
So there's fear. There's fear that arises in relationship to the pain. When you take your attention totally into the center of the pain, what do you notice about the pain?
It comes and goes.
Ah. And what does that insight tell you about the nature of this existence?
The existence of the pain, you mean? Or
no. What can you see? Firstly, about the pain, you said the pain comes and goes. What does that tell you about the whole of this life?
Everything is, it comes and goes.
Yes, everything comes and goes. And how do you relate to everything that comes and goes?
I guess there is nothing to do about it. I can just let it be.
Yes, and then when there's nothing we can do other than see the arising and the staying and the passing, what happens?
We're not clinging to the story we have about the pain and we let it like to flow away easier.
Yes.
Or
And what does that do? So basically I'm asking you to inquire what it is that the relationship to pain reveals to you in terms of insight. And you said it shows that everything comes and goes, everything is impermanent. And what next?
I know that my relation to the pain has a dramatic effect on the way I will feel the pain, or that's something I know.
Yes.
I guess that if I'm not worried about the pain, so
if you fear the pain, it adds a whole other layer to the actual physical sensation that we call pain. Pain is an overarching concept that we use for a number of different sensations that arise and cease, arise and cease.
Okay.
So, when we're really with the impermanent nature of all phenomena, what do we see? What does that show us? When we're really with it, just in the way you said, without holding on to it, without doing anything about it?
That there's nothing to be afraid of?
Ah. Okay. Yes, anybody?
Came because of the fear. I realized the fear is so strong in my life. It's such a big, takes such a big part. And I also read somewhere that the eye is constructs by fear. So I want to inquire about it.
Okay. So you want to inquire into fear. Was there fear about walking from there up to here? Okay.
Tremendous. It's still there.
Okay. What was it that helped you get from down there to here?
I felt it's important because I think it's there so much of the time, and so many people are afraid.
Okay, so the desire, if you like, or the intention to overcome your fear, what else helped you get from down there to here?
I
Yeah, take a look. You're here now. Suddenly she doesn't look so scared. How are you feeling right now?
I do feel scared.
Yeah. But the paleness has gone. Some color has come back into the face. And the shaking has stopped. Okay? All right. So, one last time. What helped you get from there? There is something that helped you. And it's your friend in dealing with fear. It's your ally in dealing with fear.
So what? I also saw nobody else is coming.
Oh no, there were lots of other people wanting to come. Yeah. It's courage that helps you overcome the fear. Okay, so courage is your friend in terms of working with fear. So let's see how the fear is constructed, how it's put together. What are the thoughts that go with your fear? Ah, there's the shakes again.
This was exactly what I was afraid of, to freeze completely. And actually, it's like my mind stops, so maybe.
Okay, so the fear is, you get up here and you have no clue what to say, and you'll be completely paralyzed and quiet. And look like you're meditating. Okay, what else is the fear? What are the other thoughts that keep the fear in place?
I was really afraid of all these nice people.
Afraid people might be nice to you? Please explain. Or you're just being nice to them?
No, it's like... yes, the fear was that I might appear stupid, or
yes.
I might get thrown away. You will tell me, like, what is this?
No! What is this? Get out of here. It's not a good question.
I realized today I was sitting in front of this cat and he left, and I thought it's because of me, it's probably my energy. And then I realized he just went to take a shit.
As cats do.
But I just saw how, like...
So you saw how the thinking that's fear-based is self-centered. It's about me. The cat moves and it's all about me, really. So it's incredibly self-centered.
Yeah, so it's like I'm in the middle of the world and everybody looks at me and they just wait with stones to attack me or something, and it's a huge war.
So the fear is held in place by this sense of the me. Can't exist without it. And then there's all the thoughts. I might say something stupid. People might think I'm stupid. I won't know what to say. And so on. The cat doesn't like me, even. Truly, this is how fear comes to be.
Like, even the cat, so how would you like?
Okay. What else do you experience in relationship to fear? Because sometimes when we feel anxiety, we feel fear in certain situations, but then what happens is we tend to get afraid of the fear. We feel frightened that the fear is going to come back again. Then we become fearful of the fear.
I think the fear was probably created when I was younger.
Mm.
Now it's really bound with fear.
Yes.
It's really huge. It's
crazy. So the fear is often related to a memory from the past. That event impacts on the present. And then there's the projection of mind. One of the papanchas today was the distortion of fear. There's the projection of mind onto the world around. In your case, it's a cat. Or it's onto somebody else. So one way of looking at our fear is to see into the fear and see how it's constructed.
See
into the fear. Okay. Just what we've been talking about.
I thought sing a song to the fear.
Sing a song to the fear? Well, that'd be novel. You can do that too if you want. But I won't be the one singing. I'll save you from that. Okay. No, I said see into the way that fear is constructed. When we really see into the fear begins to dissolve. So that's one way. The other way is to shift the attention to the freedom. So tell me about a situation where you don't feel fear.
I think it's mostly when I'm pretty safe.
Mm-hmm. So when is that?
Today there was some point where I felt I went through some period of self-hatred, and then
a little louder.
I went through some self-hatred, and then I realized there is no one there to hate, and I was empty for a while, and I felt wonderful.
Yes,
allowing myself to just be with the world.
Yes. So when we face our freedom, when we turn towards the freedom, the fear dissolves.
But when the fear is overtaking,
when we turn towards the fear and be totally and utterly with the fear, what happens then?
Usually I react.
Mm-hmm. You react?
I just want to run away.
You've been up here for 5 minutes by now. So you didn't run away. How come? So be with the fear right now. Take a look around the room, that might help. Or not.
Yeah, I was going to ask, don't you want me to run away?
No. So just look around the room and be with any fear that arises. What's your experience? What's it like sitting here, looking out there?
Strange. Exciting. It feels like overwhelming, so I don't really know what I'm experiencing.
Okay, I can see you looking at people and smiling. When you connect and smile, what happens to the fear?
It's a bit relaxing.
Yeah. The fear begins to subside.
Is it the fear that dries my mouth? It's really like...
Yes, it is. So be utterly and totally with the fear right now. Is there any problem now with fear?
There was some thought about being too exposed.
Mm-hmm. And if you were really exposed and people really saw you, what would they see? Ask them, she said. All right. She's afraid she's going to look stupid up here. Say something stupid.
Didn't they say enough?
Have you changed your mind about asking them?
Yes.
What do you sense? What do you feel?
There is excitement. The relaxation is kind of loving.
The relaxation is loving.
Yeah, it feels like.
So when you face the fear, when you connect, when you look, come up here, look at everybody, there's a loving relaxation that sweeps through the body and the fear subsides or begins to subside. So, to summarize, there are two different ways. See into the construction of fear. See the thoughts that build the fear. See that fear is dependent upon a separate sense of self. And look at that which is not bound to the self. Shift the mind to the freedom.
Too long. I'm not going to remember.
You're not going to remember? Okay, two things. Okay, let's be short, rather. Facing fear reveals the freedom. Facing freedom ends the fear. Thank you. I'll just offer a short reflection. Ajahn Buddhadasa, one of the great teachers of emptiness in Thailand, whom I had the pleasure to meet when I was a young woman, said that we are all thieves. We are all thieves because we claim things that are not ours. And we hang on to issues that don't belong to us. So these are the pains of life, these are the fears of life. So he said, in order to live with an awakened heart and to see the emptiness of self and so the emptiness of all things, we need to give back what we've taken. And we heard in the first inquiry, or we saw really demonstrated before our eyes, what it's like to really be with the painful emotions of life. And when we're really with the painful emotions, without holding to them or clinging to them, the heart, our humanity, shines forth. And then we have the capacity to deal with the very painful, and that which is not so painful in this life. It's our humanity, our ability to touch the heart-mind, to be with it, if you like, that heals. And we heard in the second inquiry how there's a healing that can be directly felt and known. There's a healing where fear ends. And when fear ends, we can come to terms with all the things we have done in our life. When fear ends, we can be at peace with the difficult issues of war, for example, as we heard. And then the war doesn't continue in the inner world. There's release. So I want to thank you, each of you who came for the inquiry, and to all of you for listening. Your open-heartedness, your patience. And if we have together the capacity to look, to see, to reflect, to inquire, to explore, then the world will be a much better place for us to be, for our children to be. Thank you. walking meditation.